The views expressed on this podcast are only those of the individuals featured on the show and do not in any way reflect the official policy of the United States government.
You are listening to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. We believe wealth isn't just about finances and money. It includes health, relationships, and anything else that makes you excited to get up in the morning. We interview members of the foreign affairs community to see how they're building wealth, both personally and financially, no matter where they're posted. This is your host, Tanya Salsa. Let's get to today's show. So we're here with Matt Shedd this morning, and Matt was in the military for 16 years before joining the Foreign Service in 2000, where he had a 15-year career, and then retired and came back and is now working as a PSC, joining us from Turkmenistan. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. We know the internet connection's a little testy there in Turkmenistan. Hope you'll bear with us. I guess our first question for you is, what's your investing story? How did you get started on your investing path?
Before I tell you that, I have to tell you, I think, a little bit of a funny story because it may resonate with some other people. Back in, say, 1993, I think it was, I was in the military, and all our friends, we were in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and our friends were all buying new homes for about $65,000. And we would go visit our friends. My wife and I were living in an apartment. We didn't have children. And my wife said to me, "We'll never be able to afford a house like that." Now, I didn't believe that at the time, but for her, it was a bridge too far. We had never owned a house when we were in the military, and we transitioned in 2000 to the Foreign Service. I wanted to buy a house right away in the DC area. She wanted to wait until we had a little bit of time on the job, and we bypassed or passed up an offer or an opportunity in 2002 to buy a really good townhouse in Fairfax. Don't want to say we regret it, but it was a missed opportunity. But before we went overseas for our first tour in 2003, that's when we made our first purchase. I convinced my wife that we needed to get into real estate before we went any further in our Foreign Service career for a lot of different reasons. We didn't have kids. We were going to be making a fair amount of money, and we needed some kind of tax write-off. And a colleague of mine in the Washington field office, I was in diplomatic security at the time, had just left the Orlando Police Department, and he said, "Orlando is growing like you wouldn't believe, and all my friends are buying homes in this area called Winter Garden. It's southwest of Orlando, and it's right outside of Disney." We tried to buy an existing home through USAA. We had a horrible experience. I told my wife, "Listen, we're going to go down there." We went on a family reunion on a cruise. I said, "When we get off that cruise ship, we're going to drive to Orlando, and we're just going to spend a week looking at new homes, and we're going to buy a new home." And that's what we did. Didn't have any experience. I think the only book I had read up to that point was Home Buying for Dummies. We're very nervous for, just like anybody else, first home purchase. But we made a really sound investment. We bought a single family home. It was about 2,400 square feet in a gated community, 20% down, 30-year fixed rate mortgage. And then after that, I started becoming somewhat obsessed with real estate. I read literally 36 books, anything from triple net leases to REITs to multifamily, single family, flipping houses, you name it, I read about it, but didn't follow any of that guidance. We continued to trudge along, and then every few years we bought another new construction single family home up until the point that we retired. And then more recently, we started getting into new construction, small multifamily homes. So triplex and quadplexes. And that's where we are now.
So that first home that you bought in Orlando in 2003, so did you live there, or was it strictly as an investment that you purchased that home?
It was an investment. We put it under contract about 3 or 4 months before we went to Sarajevo, which was our first tour. Mm-hmm. And we closed on it about 8 months after we were in Sarajevo. So okay. We never lived in it, and we sold it. We sold it like 12 years later to buy another home.
Okay. And what was the next step after that first house in 2003? Did you immediately start buying things after you were reading all of these books, or what was the next step after that?
Well, it was about a year after we closed on the first one, and the market was crazy down there. It was the beginning of the boom, and I told my wife, I think we should get into another property before the prices go up much more. So we bought another single family home. Mm-hmm. That was in 2006. And then the crash in 2009, same year we came back from China. And after the crash, we bought our third single family home in Claremont, which is just west of Orlando. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of years later, when we were looking at retiring and moving to Germany, where my wife is from, we wanted to buy a house in Germany. So we sold the first property. We didn't buy a home in Germany, and we took the money and went back and bought another home in Winter Garden, the suburb of Orlando.
And so the crash didn't deter you at all, it sounds like. So you had the two houses, and then the crash happened, and you purchased a third house. You didn't feel that real estate was risky or it wasn't a good investment strategy at that point?
Well, not the way we did it. I think a lot of people lost their shirt based on the way they invested. Our first purchase we put under contract in 2003, so the boom hadn't started, and we got a really good deal. We put 20%, we were very conservative in the way we approached it. We put 20% down, and we took a 30-year mortgage, fixed rate mortgage. The second one, we did the exact same thing. It was a little bit more expensive because it was the beginning of the boom, but the third house we bought, it was after the crash, and so the prices had readjusted again. We got a good deal on that home as well. And the thing is, we bought these homes not as to make a quick buck, and we could have, because before we even closed on the second home, we could have sold the first home for almost twice what we paid for it. And we could have sold just the contract on the second home for about $100,000 more than the contract price of the house.
Wow.
But we didn't. And the first home we purchased, the price was $216,000 for a 2,400 square foot, 4-bedroom, 2-bath home in a gated community, 5 miles away from Disney World. And we could have sold it for about 400, maybe a little over 400. And the second home we went under contract for 273. And we could have sold the contract for about 100K or turned around and sold the house right after we closed on it for 100K or more than we paid for it. The third house we bought, and the second one was a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, about 2,300 square feet. Same thing, gated community, decent up, not a ton of upgrades. That wasn't real common back then. And we didn't pay for anything. We only took the incentive money that the builder gave us, and we bought upgrades or things like that using the incentive money. We never put additional money into the house. The third house was 4-bedroom, 3-bath with a lot of standard upgrades. We paid $220 for that. That was in a golf community, gated community on a golf course.
And then, so after 2009, is that when you got into small multifamily, or what was the transition from, because it sounds like you did really well with the single family homes. What was the idea of going to small multifamily when you had something that was already working pretty well, well for you?
There are different kinds of investments. And we went into this not really understanding real estate investing, just knowing that it was a good idea to get into real estate. So we bought what we thought was a solid investment home, which it was, and we rented it out. And the thing about single family homes in these neighborhoods, for people who are on the blogs or reading real estate books, we'll call them A neighborhoods. They're new construction, built to the newest building code, which was important in Florida because of hurricanes and things like that, insurance rates, in good school districts. And so they rented out quickly and very little turnover. Most of our tenants stayed 4 years or more. And though the cash flow wasn't that good. And so we were probably breaking even or slightly or had a slightly negative cash flow on those properties, but they were appreciating relatively well. The second one did not. For some reason, that neighborhood crashed hard and never bounced back. We eventually sold that house in 2018, 12 years after we purchased it, for about what we paid for it. I don't know why it never bounced back. It was a great house, but it was a good investment still because it was rented out the entire time. I don't think we ever had more than a 3-week gap in tenants in any of our homes, our single family homes. And our average tenant stayed probably 3 to 4 years, if not longer. Now, turning the clock forward, and we've sold a couple of the first two homes, the first three homes we've sold. We just sold the third one recently, but we bought two more single family homes in the same area. And same thing, they're probably about cash flow neutral, but they're appreciating pretty rapidly right now. A couple years ago, I decided that rather than focusing on capital appreciation, we wanted to focus on cash flow. So I revisited the books on multifamily, and I started researching different turnkey companies because we didn't want to flip homes. We don't know anything about that. We don't want to do the work, and we don't want to have properties all over the country. So I tried to narrow it down to one or two markets, and I was doing my due diligence, and I identified two cities, Kansas City, Missouri, and Cleveland, Ohio, which are pretty common for people doing this. And I narrowed it down to a couple turnkey companies that seemed really reputable in those two cities. And I was about 3 weeks out from flying to each city and interviewing the companies and getting the lay of the land and doing some due diligence on the ground when I heard a podcast on Bigger Pockets about a company called Real Wealth Network. And given the option, we would have preferred to keep our investments in Florida. That's our home of record. I have family there. So just like the single family homes, we started buying in Orlando because it was our home of record, Florida. We knew we'd be going back to visit family. And Orlando was a really good place to invest because it's at the crossroads of I-4 in the Florida Turnpike. So two major lines of communication. It's midway between Daytona and Tampa. It's just not tourism. There's major industries there. Major corporations have operations there, and there's significant growth. It continues to grow. So we thought that was a good place to invest for the single family homes. Then when I heard this podcast about this company, I wanted to find out who they were so I could go research where they were building and exactly what they were building. So I contacted Real Wealth Network and I said, hey, I'd like to know what the name of this company is so I can contact them. And they said, let's set up a consultation. It's a free consultation. I said, I don't need that. I don't want to talk to you about that. I just want the name of the company. This is a referral system, right? This is you scratch my back, I scratch yours type of industry. So the only way for me to get the name was to talk to them. So I talked to them, did this 30-minute consultation, which the guy was really professional, very nice, no hard sell, just asked me what our investment goals were and things like that. And then he was getting ready to wrap up the conversation. And I said, wait, the only reason I called you was to get the name of this company. And he said, oh yeah, this is the name of the company and here's a contact form. So I contacted them, found out where they were building, and I started doing due diligence. I flew down to Florida two times. And on my third time is when I actually put our first one under contract in Ocala. That's after making three trips down there because I didn't know anything about Ocala. It's only about an hour and a half north of Orlando, but it's a different city altogether. Did some due diligence on it. It seemed like a sound investment. There were no red flags for me with the company that was selling them. So we went ahead and put it under contract. For that 30-minute consultation, AKA a referral, the Real Wealth Network got a 3% commission, referral commission. The one thing that really I'm not thrilled about is that commission exists in perpetuity. And I've gone back and forth with the owner of the company, not Real Wealth Network, the other company that sells the homes, because I didn't think that was right. I actually tried to make this. We're getting ready to close on our third purchase with them. I have no issues with the company. I do have a problem with this particular issue. So I tell people, if you want to go in and you're going to do your own due diligence and you want to buy new construction, find a rebate realtor. And I have one now that operates in Florida. Have that person contact the builder and he'll give you 2 or 2.25% of the commission back at closing. Because Real Wealth Network didn't do any of the work for me. It didn't do any due diligence. They just gave me the company's name. And every time we make a purchase in perpetuity, they get a 3% commission, which is significant. But we made the purchase on the triplex. It went well. It's a well-built home, according to our independent home inspector. We just closed on a quadplex in the same neighborhood about a month ago, and we're closing on a quadplex in Jacksonville in less than 30 days, same company. I think we're very fortunate. My wife and I are very fortunate. We're healthy. We don't have children. So we're not, some people are working into their later years because they need the money, kids in college, or they're taking care of aging parents or something like that. We're not in that position. I don't work still. I'm 57. I'm not working because I have to. I'm working because I want to. And that's quite a luxury. Investing really isn't, I don't know if I'd, I wouldn't characterize it as a career. It's more of a hobby and a way for us to supplement our retirement. I still consider ourselves novice investors because I think we're very low in the pyramid of sophistication, let's say. There's a lot of other things that we could do, and we're aware of those things. We just choose not to. Why turnkey investing? And I would say it's because this is what works for us. We're in our late 50s. We're not going to go flip houses. And flipping houses isn't like what they show on TV. It's a rough game. It's competitive. It's a steep learning curve. There's a lot of money to be made, but that's not who we are. We're looking at enjoying life, not, you know, increasing our workload. And we understand that when you buy a turnkey property, you're paying somebody else for their time and their effort and their work. And that means you get less profit, less ROI. And we're fine with that. It doesn't make it a bad investment. And I get turned off sometimes when, not to go off track from your original question, but I get turned off. I used to love listening to Bigger Pocket podcast or getting on the blog. And then I started seeing all this, all these people bashing others, novice investors, when they'd get on and ask a question or say, I did this. And everybody's got a concrete opinion about how you should be investing. And there's no one way to invest. And what works for one person doesn't work for another. I know if I were a lot more aggressive and took more risk, my wife wouldn't be able to sleep at night. Well, there's no point in doing that. We don't need to be doing this. It makes much more sense for us to take a more measured approach, a much more conservative approach. We're both on board. She's comfortable with it as well. And we talk about it all the time. I'd be comfortable being more aggressive and taking more risk, very calculated risk. I'm still very conservative in the way I approach things, but she wouldn't be. And we've been married for 30 years. There's no point in placing stress on a relationship over an investment. That's ridiculous. We don't need to do this. This is a way for us to make our retirement richer and without taking a lot of risk. And it works for us, and it may not be for everybody. It may not be enough profit margin for a lot of investors, but that's them. We've never managed the properties directly. We've always had property managers. Our experience with them has been overwhelmingly positive. We've had a couple negative experiences, but especially being overseas, I know a lot of people in the Foreign Service have asked me too, can you do it with this job? Can you do it from overseas? You can if you want to get called in the middle of the night. You can if you're willing to let your tenants suffer for a couple days. What happens if there's a major issue and it takes you days to resolve it from overseas? They're going to ask you to compensate them, reduce the rent. they're going to complain that it took you too long to respond to something major, a plumbing issue or something like that. It just wasn't worth it for us. So we always had a property manager. And moving into the multi-family thing, this is another thing that's, and I knew this going into it because it's in the purchase and sale agreement for these properties, because we've only invested with one company, this one turnkey company. When you sign a purchase and sale agreement, there's a stipulation or an addendum that you have to accept their property, their affiliated property management company for 2 years. And then after that, you can leave. I wasn't thrilled with the concept, but there's probably not a better company to do that type of management in Ocala. There's plenty of property managers there. I don't know how many of them specialize in multifamily. Their fee structure is a little bit on the high end, but that seems to be typical with multifamily properties. We're still doing pretty good with it. It's early in the game, but we're happy with it, and they do manage it. We even had somebody who, after 1 year, moved out of a new property. I don't know how they managed to leave it in the condition they did, which is one of the differences in small multifamily homes, is that it's a much different clientele. There's much more turnover, and people don't seem to take as good care of the property if they're going to be there for a short time. Whereas people in the single family homes stay several years. They don't want to live in a pigsty, so they take care of it most of the time. The company, the property management company, not only kept this guy's deposit, but went after him for the out-of-pocket expenses I had, because their fee, like I said, their fee structure was high. And so we were several hundred dollars out of pocket, even after they withheld his full deposit. They went after him, and he gave it up. So I wouldn't have been, being overseas, I wouldn't have been trying to track this guy down or go after him, but that's what they do. And so there's a price for that, and that's why they get the management fee that they do.
Matt, could you talk to us a little bit more about Florida as a market? You mentioned that you had started in Orlando, right? And then you went to Ocala to you know, try these small multifamily homes. When you were considering Ocala as like a place to invest, right? You already had some familiarity with Florida as a market, but I'm curious, how did you do due diligence on this city, and what made you comfortable to move forward? Did you look at demographics? Did you look at jobs? What were the factors that you considered before moving forward?
I looked at a lot of the same metrics people use on all the blogs, but I'm not the type of person who can make that kind of decision from a desktop. I've read a lot of blogs and books telling you, the gurus telling you that you can invest from across the country and you don't need to go visit the property. For them, again, that works. For me and my wife, that doesn't work. So we were going to Florida anyway. We had property in Orlando. I figured we'd go down and do some due diligence. So after we did some internet research, we went down, we drove around the neighborhood to see where they were building, what was going on. I always visit the local sub area police station and speak to a patrol officer. I always go to the fire station and speak to a firefighter or paramedic to find out what kind of calls they respond to. In Ocala, we went to the Chamber of Commerce. What else did we do there? Went to the county offices. That wasn't very helpful because they're very tight-lipped. They're not supposed to endorse or criticize any businesses. I was trying to find out if any of the inspectors had seen a trend in poor construction practices with that particular company, but they weren't willing to give that up. But we did multiple trips down there, drove around the neighborhood. One of the things that was a good indication was in the neighborhood where we were looking at, the county, there was a major north-south road called Baseline Road, and the county was in the process of widening the road from 2 lanes to 4 lanes. Ocala is at the end, just past the end of the Florida Turnpike. It ends in a place called Wildwood, and Ocala is just north of that. It's located along, at the time there were two major distribution centers there, Chewy.com and AutoZone. They just recently built another one in a place called Marion Oaks for Dollar Store. It's a 500,000 square foot distribution center, and they've got plans to build out another 500,000 square feet. So there's a lot going on in that area. And so after doing that due diligence, we felt pretty comfortable with the triplex we bought was, I think it was $267,000 for three identical units. It's a linear building. There's no garages. It's not sexy at all. It's pretty straightforward. Two bedroom, two bathroom. One of the bedrooms has, the bathroom is an ensuite. They put luxury vinyl flooring in it. They put granite countertops in the bathroom and the kitchen and stainless appliances. They put window coverings in and ceiling fans. So it is really turnkey. People can move in on day one. We've had them rented out. All three units were rented out within 3 weeks of closing. A lot of times they get contracts before you even close on the property. And the rent to purchase price ratio exceeded or just met the 1% rule for that property. The quadplex we just closed on, we paid $420,000 for, and our rents, our collective rents are just under 4,000. So it's shy of the 1%. The one in Jacksonville, I'm sorry, is going to just exceed the 1% rule. That's a different product. It's an over under, two up, two down. And it's not concrete block, it's wood frame, but it's quality and construction. They've put hardy plank on the outside and they've tiled the master bathroom, which really made it look nice, a nice product. And the ones that we're purchasing in Orlando, I'm sorry, Jacksonville, I keep saying Orlando. The company has offerings in three different neighborhoods for the same product, the same quadplex. The two other neighborhoods that we looked at up there, we were not comfortable investing in. The neighborhoods were questionable, and the feedback we got from the police and the paramedics was not good. A lot of drug activity. They said the neighborhoods are on the cusp. They could go either way. They could improve or they could go down. Where we purchase is a very solid area, right off of a lot of other apartment complexes there. There's some industrial areas, industrial by like warehouses and things like that, commercial office space. And so we wouldn't have bought in the other two neighborhoods that are offering the same product, only in that one. And they've told us about them and we have no interest in buying there. So every neighborhood's different and we do our due diligence on every single neighborhood before we seriously consider purchasing it. That's what insurance is for. Risk transfer. You can, when there's four ways to manage risk, it's avoid, transfer, mitigate, or accept. And so in the real estate business, especially if you have a mortgage on the property, you transfer the risk by insuring it. I know a lot of people are turned off by Florida out of concern for hurricanes. And my parents owned a home in Miami for a long time. It was never hit by a hurricane, South Miami. They sold it before, which was a big one. Andrew, was that the big one? I think that was the big one that really wiped out South Florida. But they sold that home before. But they owned the home for a long time. 20 years, I think, or more. Never hit by a hurricane. They lived in Fort Pierce up the coast, right on the water, never hit by a hurricane. Now live in Vero Beach. It's been close a couple times, never been hit. We, at the time that there was two hurricanes that hit Central Florida 3 weeks apart, I think it was 2008. And they went right over Orlando. The odds of that happening are unbelievable, but it happened. And after that, USAA non-renewed both our policies. They said that year, they said, or the next year, they said, if it's not owner occupied, we're not going to renew your policy, which I wasn't real thrilled about. So we had to go out and get other insurance, which actually wasn't a problem. And it wasn't that much more expensive. USAA has come back now. They're insuring investment properties and in Florida. As a matter of fact, we've consolidated all our policies under them and they give us very good rates and it's very good coverage. There's always going to be a chance that your property gets hit by a hurricane in Florida, probably more so if it's on the coast. If it's inland, when the hurricane comes on shore, it's going to lose power. This is another reason that we're big on new construction. New construction means latest building code. And a lot of the building code is designed to handle the winds of most hurricanes. We've had slight damage from storm damage from a couple hurricanes that came on and became ashore, became tropical storms. We didn't even file a claim for it. We just had the stuff repaired and it was a nominal cost. If you're deadly afraid of hurricanes, there's probably nothing I can say to convince you that it's still a wise investment. But that's, again, that's what insurance is for. And I still think it's a good investment. I don't think that even if your house gets destroyed by a hurricane, you're going to rebuild. If you have a strong insurance policy, you'll have rent. I'm trying to think of the proper term for it. If it's a rental property, they'll guarantee the rent for a percentage of the cost of the house. So you're going to lose, if it's uninhabitable, you're going to lose that rental income. And that's part of your insurance. So you won't lose that much money. You're going to lose your deposit. Or not, I'm using the wrong terminology. I apologize. You're going to lose your deductible and maybe anything that exceeds the rental coverage.
So that makes sense. It sounds like you just factor in the insurance into your costs. And as long as the numbers still come out well, for you, it's just a simple business decision in the sense that the return is still worth investing. And so it's just one of the risks you have to take, it sounds like.
Correct. And it's a little bit different if you're on the coast, because if you're in a flood zone, which that's the other thing people should be researching, regardless of where they are in the country, if they're close to the coast, find out if they're in a flood zone. And you can go to the FEMA webpage and do that. Or if you're on realtor.com, they even show you what flood zone you're in, right at the top, the information at the top of the advertisement. And then you can contact your insurance company and find out what it's going to cost for flood insurance. We're actually considering a new construction purchase in Port Charlotte, which is in a flood zone. I need to find out what that policy would cost to see if it's still worth investing there. And if not, we'll just find another area, perhaps a little bit inland, that's not in a flood zone.
So Matt, let me ask you, so now you've got several small multifamily, you've got some single family houses. Is your goal, what's your goal now? Is it to expand further? It sounds like you're considering new investments in Port Charlotte. And what's your long-term vision? Do you plan to pay all of these places off and then just live off the cash flow? Do you plan to do a 1031 exchange perhaps and trade up? Kind of what's your strategy going forward?
We just did our first 1031 exchange, selling a single family home in Claremont, which is outside of Orlando, for the quadplex in Ocala. That was our first attempt or first time using a 1031 tax exchange, which was a really effective strategy. I'm glad we did that. Wish we had done it before. I wasn't smart enough on it. And we're going to continue to do that. My goal is to take advantage of this maximum 10 residential home loans. When we started investing, my wife wasn't comfortable holding a lot of debt. And so what we did is we aggressively paid off the houses. We paid off each single family home in 5 years. We were overseas most of the time. She was working as well. We don't have kids. So we maxed out our TSP and all the rest of our money went into paying off the houses. So what we did is we've done a cash out refinance on those. And we're using that money to buy more property, especially now with interest rates so low. And our goal is to max out the 10 residential loans that you can have. And then after that, we're probably not going to invest anymore. We're probably going to hold it for the medium term. And then in about 10 years, start selling the properties off one per year or whatever makes sense for us according to the market and where we are financially, but we'll probably start selling them off before we incur any large capital expenses. And we'll be at that point, we'll be pushing 70. We may take the money from those sales and put it into a syndication. That may be what we do with it.
So Matt, to wrap up, we were wondering, because there's a lot of different investors at different stages of their strategy that are listening to this show, what would be your best piece of advice for people either just getting started or a little bit apprehensive about real estate investing in general? Do you have any advice for them?
Absolutely. I would say the first thing I would do is read a book. And I know that's not real sexy. People want to, they want to jump right in. And I think the best thing you can do is, if you have a fear of investing, and I think most people are very apprehensive about investing in real estate, it's the fear of the unknown. And I think that's probably what it was for both my wife and me, probably my wife more so. It's just such a monumental purchase, at least initially, that reading a book is really empowering. I told you before, I read A Home Buying for Dummies, and I was like, okay, I understand the process now. And when we went in to our first closing, the other thing we did is we've always used an attorney. We have a great attorney in Orlando, and we pay them every time, even, and every purchase has been new construction. The seller has always told us, you don't need a lawyer to review the paperwork. It's new construction. You don't need a home inspector to inspect the property. It's new construction. The county inspectors inspect it. Yeah, they're looking for code. That's what they're looking for.
Correct.
Our home inspectors always find stuff, and they find a lot. Our lawyers are always find things. Early on, they found mathematical errors in the closing statement that would have cost us thousands of dollars. So we pay for a lawyer to review our closing documents every time. We pay for a home inspector to inspect the home. And I ask a lot of questions. I read everything I sign. I've found the first contract we had, not the contract, I'm sorry, the closing documents. I read the entire closing packet. The legal address of the home was incorrect. There was all kinds of errors that I pointed out. And then our paralegal and lawyer found a lot of other mistakes. So I say, read a couple books on real estate investing. It's very empowering, and it really brings down the anxiety level. Pay for good help, have a lawyer, because that person is a disinterested party. They're there to represent you, not the seller. And you're paying them to look out for your interests. And it's like a few hundred dollars for them to review those documents. It's money spent. Home inspector, same thing, $300-$400 to get a home inspection. That takes a lot of the anxiety away. And it's very empowering because you have two professionals that are advocating for you and looking out for your investment. And so I think people can be a lot less concerned, especially starting out, if they educate themselves, they do their own due diligence, never take somebody else's word for it, and pay for good help.
If you like this episode and want more, make sure to give us 5 stars on the podcast player of your choice. And after that, check out our Facebook page. From there, you can learn about our other episodes, connect with our guests, and of course, share your own ideas for success. We'll see you next time.